This podcast was recorded Thursday, August 13th at 10:10 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like far-left progressives will realize, canceling Thanksgiving is not a widely popular position. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who realize sometimes it's really about the candidates when it comes to winning elections. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, aligning your campaign position with popular opinion leads to our Snollygoster of the Week award. But first, Max Miller is holding firm. The Cleveland area congressman did not withdraw from the race. He vows to fight allegations he emotionally and physically abused his ex-wife and possibly their two-year-old daughter. He says he is determined to win re-election in what is normally a fairly safe Republican district. President Trump won that district by 11 points 2 years ago. But analysts say it is not as safe as it could be, thanks to the allegations that Miller faces. He is running against ironworker Brian Poindexter. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee has added Poindexter to the list of candidates it will support in these midterm elections. Internal polls reportedly show Poindexter leading Miller in that race. The Cook Political Report has moved the race from likely Republican to toss-up. Republicans remain confident Miller will win, but it is far from a sure thing. Remember, Miller only got 51% of the vote 2 years ago, that same election where, as we said, President Trump won by 11 points in that district. Because there are so very few public polls on congressional races, one thing to watch is the money. Does Max Miller's fundraising fall off? Does Brian Poindexter's fundraising increase? What do the outside groups do? Does the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee really commit to the race? They say they will, but saying you will do something and actually doing it sometimes is not the same thing. It will be interesting to watch. When it comes to politics, Ohio has little in common with New York or California. Michigan, though, is a different story. So lessons learned from a Michigan election are a little more valuable than ones from New York or L.A. So what lessons can Ohio Democrats learn? Can Ohio politicians from either party learn from Abdul El-Sayed's far-left progressive victory in Michigan's Senate primary? To discuss that and the latest on the data center posturing, we turn to the Columbus on the Record panel. Reporter Jesse Balmert from the USA Today Ohio Network, Gene Krebs, former state legislator and member of the group Better Choices for Ohio, and OSU political scientist Herb Asher. Herb Asher, can we read anything into that and how it might relate here?
Very little, and I say very little because, we had asked, where are the Democratic Socialists in Ohio? Well, actually, there's some at the local level, but you first have to ask the question, what do we mean by Democratic Socialists? And I think for a lot of people, it means basically people who favor a more expansive federal government providing services, whether it's child care, whether it's universal health care and things like that. But now I think the challenge for Democrats is to not let the Republican Party define democratic socialism as communism, as support for trans, as a whole variety of things that really are not part of the economic agenda. I would say that Bernie Sanders is a democratic socialist, and I would say that Elizabeth Warren is, and I would say that Sherrod Brown would never use that term, but he's been actually fighting for the working class, in our past history. I'd say in some ways Howard Metzenbaum.
But that, Jesse, the economic message seems, whatever the labels are, socialist, communist, democratic socialist, The economic message, get the money out of politics, put it in your pocket. That was kind of El-Sayed's catchphrase. I'm not quoting it exact, but that's basically what he was saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think the message is important, but I do think the labels are being used. I mean, you see Republicans labeling everyone as a socialist and a communist and so forth. And so I think the brand could use a little bit of work, particularly in states like Ohio. You see Democratic Ohio governor candidate Amy Acton talking about how she wants to put Republicans on her on her cabinet. She talks about how she supports work requirements for Medicaid. She had some other comments about like transgender individuals that drew some frustration and like backlash from her own party. So those are more moderate positions than, you know, perhaps the more progressive wing of the party.
So should Republicans just say, okay, he's that person's a socialist and write him off, or should they pay a little more attention to what that socialist is saying?
They will, my people, my Republicans, will continue to hammer home on this, but in reality, it will be like pouring water over a rock. You know, the voters will look wet and nothing will soak in. They're not focused on that. They're focused on, you know, and you go back to the economy here. Remember, if people who play the lottery and win very seldom stay with their job. Their job is a means to the end, and that end is to satisfy the five core values, okay? So they're not speaking to those core values. They're off on these tangents, and it's just not what people are focused on.
Is the term socialist, I mean, folks around this table study your history and, you know, the Red Menace and all that stuff. Yeah. But for younger folks, socialist is whatever. I don't think it has the same meaning.
I think some of the people, including Donald Trump, who are throwing out words like communist and socialist, are representing an earlier generation where that sort of politics did work, where the McCarthy-Roy Cohn era did work. And, in fact, Trump was a sort of a prodigy of Roy Cohn. So maybe they believe it'll... I agree with you. I don't think a socialist... But if somehow you can define democratic socialists, and here's where Syed in Michigan, I think, has a little bit of a problem. At one point, he talked about defunding the police. That's not a part of democratic socialism. The whole question of how much support or what weapons you sell to Israel, that's not a part of democratic socialism. Republicans, look, if they have a bad economy and they have an unpopular president, then how can they win an election? They can win an election by trying to demonize the Democrats. So you'll call them every name possible and hope that something sticks. But I agree with Gene that some of this just is incredible.
Yeah. Medicare for all. Is there any way that Amy Acton can say, I support Medicare for all and win in Ohio?
I mean, she isn't. And so she probably has seen the numbers that's not something that's going to go over well with the Republicans and maybe even independents in the state of Ohio. But it's certainly an idea that people are talking about. I do think also you're just seeing support for outsider, non-establishment candidates. Or you're looking for someone who hasn't been in government forever. And again, you'll see that in the governor's race. These are both candidates who've never run for elected office before. And even in the Senate race, they're saying, oh, the other guy's been here longer, even though both of them have been there quite some time.
Abdul Al-Sayed excites people, Herb.
Yeah.
It's good on the stump. Amy Acton and Sherrod Brown, not quite the same level of excitement around them. Sherrod Brown's been a while. He's, you know, a passionate guy. But Amy Acton's more empathetic than exciting.
Well, in Michigan, if Abdul Sayed could actually win, that would be an indicator that it's going to be a fantastic Democratic year nationally, because he's running against an opponent, Mike Rogers, who lost 2 years ago by only a percentage point or two, a very credible Republican. Mike Rogers would be smart to not link himself too much to Donald Trump and, say he supports Trump when he does, but when he'll disagree. And if, in fact, somehow Syed could win, and win in part because they increased the turnout, there's a lot of enthusiasm, or he can convince voters that what a democratic socialist is, with that label, is somebody who's fighting for you. If he can do that, then I think it's a good Democratic year.
So I've already gotten a text message from Mike Rogers saying, give me money so I can go and support Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So he's tying himself very closely to him.
Big mistake.
Why are there no statewide Democratic Socialists in Ohio? They're at the local level. Are we more like Indiana than Michigan? Because Michigan, it's very similar. It's more purple than we are.
This is Ohio. We're not really a state. According to the University of Akron's Bliss Institute, we're actually five separate fiefdoms based upon five different settlement patterns. If you want to see that, go up to Northeast Ohio, where it was always part of the Connecticut Reserve. And they are much more like Connecticut than they are like anywhere else.
I think we once had somebody who would be considered a very strong progressive liberal, and that was Howard Metzenbaum. Mm-hmm. But he did a great job of converting that liberalism, which at times had a very negative connotation, to say, no, I'm fighting for the working class and the middle class. And so when he went after Big Pharma, He didn't just say they're greedy bastards. He wound up saying, why don't they do research on drugs for diseases that hurt a lot of people, even if they don't make a lot of profit on that? Yeah.
All right. We'll get to our last topic. Last week, A.B. Acton said she would impose a conditional moratorium on data centers if she became governor. This week, her Republican opponent toughened his stance on data centers. Up until now, Vivek Ramaswamy said data centers are good for Ohio so long as they paid for their own power. His new plan goes further. He wants data centers to pay the electric bills of families who live nearby. He would ban data center property tax abatements. He would mandate they follow strict clean air and clean water standards. And he wants to prioritize industrial sites for these centers to protect farmland. Gene Krebs, is this plan enough to satisfy folks in rural western Ohio who do not like data centers?
Not at all. So a couple responses here. One, they actually, I've not seen the article, but somebody interviewed the young man from Adams County who's circulating the petitions to do a complete ban on all data centers. And he said, I don't want free electricity. I don't want to see them. I don't want to hear them. I don't want the light pollution from them. I don't want them taking all my water. Okay? It's about, once again, it goes back to, it's the values of life. It's the quality of life. And I know you get people on here all the time who say, oh, it's all about the pocketbook. It's not about the pocketbook. Jim Rhodes is still dead. Okay? It's now about values, and it's been that way since the 90s.
So, Jesse, Ramaswamy is technically he's the third gubernatorial candidate to come out with his data center plan. Because the Libertarian candidate this week, Doug Kissick wants an immediate ban on data centers, at least a halt on construction.
Yeah, I mean, it shows me that all of the governor candidates are looking at the same situation. They know that these are extremely unpopular with people who live nearby. They're unpopular with environmentalists. A lot of people are frustrated with the non-disclosure agreements and just the secrecy around these. There's just like a lot of really horrible PR for data centers right now. And so each candidate is trying to come up with a way to say, I'm going to tackle this issue that you care about.
Don Kissick is the Libertarian candidate, I should say. Herb, free electricity. Sounds pretty good. Now, there's strings attached. There has to be, basically, as if a data center generates its own power through like a nuclear power plant or some kind of...
Yeah, then
little power plant on the property, solar perhaps. Mm. The extra would go back to the nearby residents, and they would get free power.
Yeah, no, look, this is clearly the Ramaswamy campaign advisors are very savvy, and they said, "Oh, this is becoming an issue. We need to position Vivek on that issue." I think a lot of people that I've talked to already—it's only been out a couple of days—don't think it's credible. We know why he's doing it, because this is an issue. It's also an issue in the U.S. Senate race. One of the major charges that Sherrod Brown is leveling against John Husted is basically giving away the store for data centers or whatever. So, in fact, actually, the emphasis in the governor's race may have a spillover effect and be helpful to Sherrod Brown and hurt John Husted in the U.S. Senate race. But look, these data centers, I think we know, why did they come to Ohio? Because land, water, electricity, and decent transportation routes to get the equipment there to manufacture these plants. A lot of communities, not New Albany, but some of the smaller communities thought, oh my God, we're getting a data center. This is great. As we know, there aren't many permanent jobs. There are jobs created for the construction industry. And after the center is finished, there are jobs for the repair people in case. But this is not quite the deal. So a moratorium makes a lot of sense.
John Kissick, the Libertarian candidate, Gene, he said immediate moratorium. That has to be music to the folks in your area.
If you can get the word out, if you can get, has enough money to do some Facebook ads, word of mouth, yes. Otherwise, no. I'm often wrong on your show. But in September.
I forget.
Yeah. But in September of last year, I sat in one of these seats and I said, this data center thing is a toxic topic. And I was talking to a young Democrat lawmaker from Northeast Ohio, and this issue of data centers came up. And what he said was, you've not seen it resolved yet because they're not done draining all the money they can out of the industries yet from campaign donations. And so they're keeping this alive. So that's why they haven't passed that bill yet, he said. And I'm sitting there going, oh my gosh, you've been here not very many years, and you got that nailed.
But that's the all these candidates, Jesse, have a balance. Amy Acton wants a moratorium, but she's not saying don't build them. They got to have union labor. They got to be on brownfields. Vivek Ramaswamy the same way. You can build them, just play by these rules. So they're not saying ban them completely. They're trying to balance the two interests there.
Right, and neither Acton nor Ramaswamy is saying you cannot bring these to Ohio. They're trying to exact some concessions from them. Ramaswamy saying, pay for electric bills, pay for property taxes. Acton saying use 100% labor, union labor, build these on brownfields, not farmlands. And so there is negotiations to be made here, but a lot of these will also have to be approved by the state legislature that was unable to come to a conclusion at the end of June. So it is complicated.
One thing that's very interesting here is that what Acton proposed is almost exactly, almost word for word, what the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation has also requested. And so to have a Democrat candidate for governor and Farm Bureau, which is normally a very Republican-leaning organization, they're nonpartisan, but they lean Republican, overlap like that, it's just amazing.
There's a great chance those folks vote for her in November because of that.
Right now, many of my people are not voting in that election for governor at all, and they're staying home. And we can go into that later.
But if you ask between Acton and Ramaswamy, who has more credibility on this issue? I would say that Acton does, only because of her past record and his past comments in support of data. But the key is the Libertarian candidate. And I don't know how, Gene had said, how well can he get his message out? If he can get 8% of the vote,
it's over.
It's
over at 4%.
Yeah, because 2/3 of his vote will come from Republicans, and that will change the outcome.
It will.
But somebody has to raise. Could Democrats throw some money his way, Gene?
Oh, they did that in 2024 in the Marcy Kaptur race that put $434,000 of Democrat dark money went into propping up the Libertarian in that race, and he got 4.1%. Libertarians in Ohio pretty much standard get around 4 to 7%. It would be interesting to see, but my people, it's for them, moratorium, ban. It's not about, it's antiquated to talk about jobs, pocketbook. No, the job is a means to the end. You want to look at the end to understand what people are really thinking.
Well, data centers expose so many fears: loss of farmland, industrial site next door, rising electricity rates, and don't forget the underlying fear of AI and how rapid changes in technology is affecting our daily lives. It all comes through in this great data center debate, the boogeyman known as the data center. We'll see how long it lasts. Thanks to our Columbus on the Record panel, Gene Krebs of the group Better Choices Ohio, OSU political scientist Herb Asher, and State House reporter Jesse Balmert of the USA Today Ohio Network. We'll be right back. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. Let's just say Amy Acton is not trying to win over those Democratic socialists in Ohio. She has come out against trans women participating in girls and women's sports. She wants to regulate data centers, but not shut them down. And this week, she came out in favor of the fall ballot issue that would enshrine Ohio's voter photo ID law into the state constitution. It is issue 3. Many Democrats and progressives say the amendment is unnecessary because it's already state law. But voter photo ID is popular. Better than 80% of Americans support showing a driver's license or a photo ID at the polls before you can cast a ballot. And that's where Amy Acton is. Annoying the far left, but right with popular opinion. For a Democrat running in Ohio, that is pretty shrewd. For that, she gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. We are a part of the NPR network. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.